You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Elaine Colley-Wantraub, one of the founders of The Trail on Martha's Vineyard, also the author of Lighting the Trail, The African-American Heritage of Martha's Vineyard. So we were talking about the students and their involvement here. And as head of the history department at Martha's Vineyard Regional High School, you've been responsible for engaging them with the trail. So describe how you've incorporated the trail into the history curriculum.
Well, I think that the trail itself began as it was very ambitious to think in terms of having 4 sites, then 8 sites. To get to 25 involving every town on the island has meant that the trail is very large. It takes more than 4 hours to travel the whole trail. So the students were involved in various ways in both as here is a project, here is something I want you to read about. But mostly it's to involve them in adding to what we know, wherever that's possible, or demonstrating what they know through the creation of beautiful projects, which they have just done. As far as the curriculum goes, we teach U.S. history for 2 years, the 8th and does constitutional, and then at the high school, the 9th and 10th grade does U.S. history. It belongs in there. It's a natural time for students to engage with their community, which they do interviews, gathering oral histories, they go out and about. It works with that developmental age too. That sense of they're still pretty concrete in their reasoning. So when they learn about slavery, it's like, oh, yes, here we go, slavery. But when it's got a name and a story and you can walk to it and you can look and you can make something as a memento for that person, you can pay your respects to a real person. Very different.
Yeah, it makes it alive. This is not just a project, though, for the high school students. You also work to spread the word about the trail to residents and visitors. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that?
Well, the website is very comprehensive. Over the years, Al Mahoney, our website person, has done a great job working with students who add to it. Local newspapers have given us a lot of coverage. So the website's pretty comprehensive. And we offer tours. We take tours in the summer. We've taken most of the big colleges in this area. This year, for the second year, we'll be taking Howard University Alumni Association out on 2 separate days. I think for the summer community, it really resonates with certain of the visitors. Somebody said to me last year, one of the people who took the trail, and said, you know, every time I go anywhere as an African-American, I look to see what's available, what's of specific African-American context. I usually don't find very much. So I think that helps spread the word, which was the whole point.
Right.
Because that history didn't exist, the whole point is to spread it to everybody. And so every opportunity we have, we try and do that. But also, it's to educate and also finance developing more sites of the trail.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question, was what are some of the future people and sites that you hope to include?
I'm very engaged with one at the moment. And she lived in a variety of places, including France. But she had a home in Martha's Vineyard and died there in the 1980s. Her name was Emma Chambers Maitland. And she began her life as the daughter of sharecroppers in the 1880s in Virginia. She talked about having 2 pairs of shoes, one for working in the field, one for going to church. She decided, apparently, as a teenager, that she wanted to be a school teacher. Her parents felt this was far too ambitious and getting above yourself. And so she went and secretly trained. Her nephew says he believes she went to a local convent and asked them for help, and they gave her help. And she took the teacher test, and the highest score she could have got would have been a 5, and she got a 4. Parents weren't very happy, but she persisted. She then decided, she came to New York and Washington, D.C., and met her husband, who was a doctor. He had just qualified. And she said she was a fiancé, a wife, a mother, and a widow in one year. But she doesn't seem to have ever been deterred by these things. Her husband died of tuberculosis within a year of the marriage. She had a child in arms. She took the child back to her parents in Virginia, and she went to France as a dancer. While she was dancing and as an entertainer in the Paris of the 1910s and 20s, the era of such entertainment, in one review she had a scene where she had to box with another woman. And it was such a popular thing that they both became boxers and put years into this. And Emma, in fact, became the world lightweight lightweight female boxer.
That's amazing.
But that wasn't the end of her story. She did that for a few years. She came back to America. She ran a gym and became a nurse. And her nephew called me and said, I have to tell you about my aunt. I no longer go to Martha's Vineyard. The house is old and falling apart. But I want some kind of recognition for her. And when I read about her story, and it was just amazing. So she's our next project.
So I would imagine then you expect this trail to continue on in perpetuity. There's always going to be new stories that come forward. So,
always.
So is that how you're finding some of them now? Is people telling you, I have this relative like this nephew?
Yes. I think in the beginning it was all very research-based. It was me running and reading through records, going to New Bedford, looking at whaling records, reading people's wills and probate, and all very primary source document-based. It wasn't the stories, because people have to know, they have to know you before they start telling you their life stories. And so they should. And so after a while, people began to come forward. And sometimes it's a little bit like, well, you know, she's got a plaque on her house. My family are really intriguing. Why isn't there a plaque on mine? But not usually. People have stories, and they feel maybe for the first time that those stories are of value. And so they share them.
Yeah. Well, another interesting story is about Randall Burton and Edgar Jones. So tell us more about them.
Well, Randall Burton, that is an interesting story. The story is there are two conflicting versions. There's actually a third version for other reasons, which I'll explain in a minute. But the Vineyard Gazette in 1854 reported that a fugitive had stowed away on a boat to Holmes Hall, Vineyard Haven, and had been taken to what was then called Gay Head, dressed as a woman, and hidden, and that the sheriff had gone up to rescue him, but to quote them, when he got there, he was overcome by the glory of God and the beauty of nature, and he couldn't do anything, and when he came to, the fugitive had left. That was one story. The fugitive had definitely left because I was able to track that down through another project that after the Civil War, people gathered stories from fugitives who'd escaped to Canada. But some years later, Mrs. Vanderhoop had published another version of the same story in the Vineyard Gazette, in which she said that the tribe hid Randall Burton, who was also known as Edgar Jones, because I suppose he kept changing. And there were certain commonalities to the story, that he was dressed as a woman and put a bonnet on him, which of course would hide his face. And so that would be a good disguise. But the tribal story is a little different, that the sheriff came up and offered them $10 to give him the fugitive, and that they decided that that was not what they should do. That would not be an honorable thing to do. So they didn't. And it was a standoff. And again, he was smuggled out through Menemshire. The version that he gave in the project in Canada, the fugitive stories, very much corroborates the tribal story.
Oh, interesting.
But it is an interesting thing, too, of perspective, people telling the same story where they're telling it from. Because I'm a history person, I know that the Second Fugitive Slave Act offered rewards, bounty hunters were sent out. It was an attempt to stave off the Civil War by saying, well, if you escape from a slaveholding state, you must be returned. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of financial incentive on sending him back,
yeah.
But he escaped.
And you said there was a third version.
Well, the third version is his.
Oh, that's okay. So, which is almost the same as the second version.
It's almost the same as the tribal story.
Yeah. Really fascinating, these stories that you're uncovering. And, of course, you mentioned that you created a website for the trail, and we're going to post a link at our website, capeandislands.org, so folks can take a look at that. And it has an interactive map of the trail, also a place for students to post some of their research, so
yes.
Folks are more interested in seeing some of that.
Yes. Yeah. And the student projects will be that they have just completed some of them. The photographs will be on display there because it's nice for it serves so many purposes. It's very much an adult research. We get lots of people from colleges contacting me and asking about work they're doing for graduate work. But it also belongs to the kids of
Absolutely.
The island because
sure.
that story will never be lost now because they know it.
Elaine Colley-Weintraub, author of Lighting the Trail, The African-American Heritage of Martha's Vineyard, and head of the History Department at the Martha's Vineyard Regional High School. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Coming up after break, we talk about the integration of Nantucket schools with Barbara Ann White, author of A Line in the Sand, The Battle to Integrate the Nantucket Public Schools, 1825 to 1847.